Welcome to Systems Meet Humanity, shining a spotlight on the intersection where business structures meet emotion. I'm your host, Marina Darlow. Let's dive in. Today's episode features a sci-fi screenwriter, columnist, and blogger who redesigned her life and career to support her calling as a writer, Jenna Avery. Among many juicy topics in this conversation, we discuss emotions as signposts, how Jenna teaches to use these emotions to guide us. Jenna, hi, welcome to Systems Meet Humanity.
Hi.
Okay, so for the first time on this show, we have a writing coach, not just any kind of writing coach, but someone who helped hundreds of authors throughout the years. And Jenna, working with some of the most creative people out there, she would be a really interesting person to have a conversation about systems and emotion as they converge in business. So my first question, I like to ask most of my guests, the emotions that your creativity brings up, when do they propel you forward and your clients as well, and help you grow the business versus when do they kind of hinder? When do they stop you on your tracks? When do you see your clients being really held back by some kind of a negative emotion or maybe some kind of a positive emotion? You know, like if you're so happy, so pleased with whatever it is that you become compliant, could you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Yes. So I run into a lot of emotion with the writers that I work with, and also in my own business as a writing coach and my own writing career. And it's pretty interesting how, you know, for the most part, I would say that there are certain emotions that can get in the way, that can paralyze us and stop us from moving forward with our writing. And I would generally categorize those as what writer Stephen Pressfield calls resistance. And those feelings are things like fear and self-doubt, shame, guilt, and anxiety. You know, those are the main lions and tigers and bears that we deal with when it comes to feelings that stop us in our tracks and make it hard for us to move forward. But then there are also these other funny feelings that are a little trickier, like apathy or boredom, or even what I call creative confusion. And then some more specific fears, like fears of success and fears of failure and fears of ridicule. Those are what I call spotlight fears. So there's this really fascinating, complicated set of feelings, emotions, energies that can come up that can really trip us up and slow us down. And I think we have to learn how to navigate around them in order to grow. But also what's really interesting is that they are incredible signposts as well for the places that we need to grow. So they play a dual role.
Okay. So I want to ask you like a host of questions now. Let me try with one that really stood out to me. I first want to talk about your notion of signposts, these emotions as signposts. What do you mean by that? And how do we, essentially how we harness these signposts, like signposts are there for us to guide us. How do we use these emotions to guide us?
Well, for each one, there are some kind of specific corresponding things to look out for. But at the same time, they all point to where we're scared to go, where we're afraid to move forward, where we're feeling resistance. And unless there's some kind of deeper wisdom going on, which is possible, because sometimes there's sort of an inner guidance or an intuition saying, that's not the right direction right now. Usually that's not the case. Usually it's more like, this is the thing that really scares me. And that's exactly the place that I need to go in order to grow as a person and grow in my business. So that's what I mean when I say a signpost. So like, let's say I'm feeling scared to finish my screenplay, or I'm feeling scared to publish a blog post on my website. Well, that's going to show up looking like procrastination or perfectionism or some other kind of resistance, but really underneath that is fear. And really underneath that is I need to actually go ahead and finish. I need to hit the publish button. I need to keep moving forward. So it's like, it's almost like they're little guides pointing us to where we exactly need to grow.
So if we continue with this notion, mm-hmm. I wonder, how do you know when it's truly a signpost versus when your intuition is just telling you, no, this is really the wrong thing? Do you have a way of identifying, kind of distinguishing the two? Or is it just really a case-by-case thing?
It's an art. It's not a science, because it has to do with learning to trust yourself and learning to understand your own signals. But I will say that in the 90% range of time, it's more, mostly resistance when it comes to writing. Certainly there are other things where it's a different category, but when it comes to writing, very often it's resistance telling us, okay, this is a place I need to keep moving forward and look at what's stopping me and find ways to navigate through it, versus, okay, no, this is something I should stop doing because it's not the right fit for me. And when it is really the not the right fit, when it really is the intuition, it's a deeper, quieter, calmer sense of information that comes, as opposed to the way resistance shows up is usually more of negative thoughts, feeling overwhelmed or paralyzed, or feeling fearful. Those things are not signs of inner guidance. Those things are signs of fear.
Interesting. Okay. So I'm used to using systems for most things. And I also find that in many cases, systems really help me deal with emotions. And one of the, I would say, techniques that I found tremendously useful in getting past the fear, mm-hmm. is Tim Ferriss's exercise of fear sitting. Have you heard about it?
I've studied Tim Ferriss, and I don't know if I know that one. I have one called Fear Storming that I wonder if this may possibly be the same or similar. Tell me about it.
He has a wonderful TED Talk about it. I'll link to it in the show notes. He has you write down your fear, write down the worst possible scenario, and grade it on a scale of 1 to 5. I think 1 being the least, 5 being the most like horrible situation, or the other way around, doesn't really matter. But he wants you to rank it. And then the best possible scenario, he wants you to rank how much of a gain it would be. And after that, in the worst possible scenario, so for instance, what the worst that could happen? I would forget to pay my taxes. What will I do next? What would be the worst case scenario if I forget to pay my taxes? I would owe a ton of money. My business could be cash strapped. What do I do to prevent it? And then you plan for your worst case scenario, you rank the probabilities, and it all comes down to kind of easily quantifiable bottom line. In many cases, you realize that you're held back by fear that maybe a 3, and you're preventing yourself from getting an outcome that may be like a 10, which is much, much higher, much, much better for you. Yeah. For people who need something quantitative, and actually for the most of us, it's a very tangible way to decide whether your fear is really well based in reality and guide you in terms of what should you do about your fears.
Yeah, I apologize. I misunderstood you when you said fear. I thought you said fear sitting, but I have heard of fear setting, but I hadn't heard the part about ranking it. And I really like that. The part that I had heard that I also really like is how he has you think about, you know, what are the worst possible outcomes that could occur if worst thing comes to pass? And then how can I proactively address those things? I mean, I know he has different phrasing for his questions, but what I like about it is thinking through, well, what's possible and how could I deal with it? Because so often we're not trusting ourselves, or we're not taking the time to think about what we could do or how we could handle it, and forget that we actually could handle something going on.
Exactly. Right. We have control here. Like, we're actually, most of the time, we're in the driver's seat, especially when it comes to our own decisions, such as, should I write this book? Should I contact this publishing house? Should I dedicate half of my week to writing, or is it a completely worthless endeavor? And so on and so forth. And notice how this is a really good example of systems meet emotion. You have an emotion that could be truly overwhelming, and then you put a system in place that helps you channel this emotion into something productive, helps you get to the other side, past the fear, or help you assess the fear and say, you know what? Okay, maybe I shouldn't invest in this little startup. Maybe it's too risky and maybe the consequences are too dire. So yeah, I wonder, speaking of fear and emotion, creative people, your tribe, your pool, your world, do you think that they tend to be more susceptible to emotional overwhelm?
You know, I think that because so many creative people are also introverted and or highly sensitive, that we can be more susceptible to intense emotional feelings. Those two things tend to go hand in hand. And especially for those of us who are highly sensitive, that might also have a lower threshold for stimulation. That's what it means to be highly sensitive. Mm-hmm. Because emotions can be overstimulating, we can feel more overwhelmed more quickly than our less sensitive counterparts when we're dealing with intense emotions. So in other words, yes, I think we can be more susceptible to emotional overwhelm. I also think that because creative people are also generally quite visionary, meaning that we have this incredible ability to see the final outcome, the potential in something, the wholeness of what something could become. And it can be really overwhelming and stressful in a sense to deal with the gap between where we are right now and the final thing that we're aiming to get to, and then the sheer quantity of work that has to happen to get from point A to point B, especially with a writing project, a long form writing project is a big deal, you know, that we can feel emotionally overwhelmed by that as well fairly easily.
I can relate. You know, I very often feel emotionally overwhelmed by the email that I need to write. You should see me writing a launch sequence for this very podcast. Oh my goodness. It ended up like it was written and it was good and it was sent out. And then I had a major meltdown. It took like so many mental and emotional resources for me because it's writing and it's putting my work out there and the stakes are high, or at least in my mind, they were high. Like, I don't know how many people are listening currently. So question.
Yes.
That gap, what are the first steps and maybe what are the general guidelines to bridge it? How do you battle the overwhelm? Well, I shouldn't say battle because frankly, I don't believe in Hulk smashing the overwhelm. That just never works. That just adds to overwhelm. Mm-hmm. But how do you navigate this hot mess of creation from point A where you have the vision to point B where this vision is realized?
It's a really great question. And my recommended solution is a combination of a few different steps. The first thing is to make a plan and to have an overall strategy for how you're going to get from point A to point B. Especially with writers, I'm finding that there's this, a lot of people just think that if you're going to write a book, you just sit down and write it just from beginning to end and then you're done. And that's just not how it works. It's a very iterative process. There are a lot of steps along the way. There are development steps. There are writing steps, there are finalizing steps and proofreading and polishing. You know, there's a whole collection of things that happen along the way. And a lot of people go into it saying, I'm going to write a book. And they don't actually have a plan for how they're going to do it. And they don't even know that they need a plan.
Interesting. So we're like, I'm going to write a chapter a week. And then by the end of 12 weeks, I'm going to have 12 chapters and that will be my book. Well, honestly, honestly, I have to say, this is more like my 9-year-old's idea of planning a book. And even she knows better than that. So it's not what I'm trying to say here, that even when you have a plan for a major project, not just a book, but for anything creative, it's never truly linear.
Right. Right. It's very iterative. And with a book, with any kind of creative project too, we have to be ready for things to take on a life of their own, for us to discover things along the way that change the course and the direction of what we're doing, and to make decisions about if we want to allow that to happen, if we want to go with that shift, or if we want to steer it back in the direction we had intended to go. So there's that piece of the puzzle too. The other thing that I was going to say about the way to close the gap, or the way to bridge the gap, is that a very handy and useful tool that a lot of coaches talk about is chunking it down or making small pieces. And so once you have your plan, it's to go back to the beginning of what's at the top of the plan and pick out the smallest possible increment and start working with that. And it's almost like, again, because we're so visionary and because we can see so far ahead, I think we almost have to like get the plan in place and then stop looking at it and stop thinking about it and just like narrow the focus just to one tiny small thing and only do that thing. And if that one small thing still feels too big, and by too big, I mean still is triggering fear, doubt, procrastination, paralysis, perfectionism, etc. If that's happening, make it smaller. And if it still keeps happening, make it smaller and smaller and smaller until it's something that you can do. And in the case of writing, oftentimes that looks like starting with some very small increment of writing, like 5 to 15 minutes, even 1 minute of just saying, okay, I'm just going to spend 1 minute writing today, and I'm going to set my timer. I'm going to do my 1 minute of writing, and then I'm going to celebrate the heck out of it when I'm done. Because I've faced this huge amount of fear, even though the increment of writing feels like this small, tiny piece, I've actually faced this huge thing. So it's easy to get the measurements off in a way, because the 1 minute of writing compared to the huge amount of fear that's being faced, it's not as measurable, right, compared to the 1 minute of writing. But at the same time, it's a huge accomplishment.
I agree. And also, I want to add two things here. One, it's okay to write a very, very crappy draft. It's like you write for 1 minute, and it's perfectly fine for that 1 minute just to write, I can't write today. Today is not really my writing day. I hate writing in general. What am I doing in this career path? I will be a clerk, and I will have my quiet, and I hate writing, and my brain is just not working. And after you kind of clean out this monkey brain, maybe you'll get a few lines that actually are part of your novel or part of your blog post or part of your product description. So that's one thing. And another thing, what you're describing in the productivity world, that's what David Allen calls the next action, which is the
right
smallest possible increment of what you can do immediately. This is what gets you through the barrier. Now, when you talk about this next action, because honestly, that's just how I can bring myself to think about it, I think it can be really, really helpful in dealing with stuff that you mentioned before, which are basically boredom and apathy. What do you think? Like, is that the best tool to get out of this bored mode? Or do you have any other systems that you coach your clients on?
Actually, the small increments of writing time, or the next action, however you want to call it, I find to be more useful for sneaking past the fear than for dealing with boredom and apathy. Because what I find is that when we're, because one of the myths of writing is that we have to have big blocks of time to write.
Oh, and, so it's a myth.
And a lot of people also similarly think that they need a lot of time to warm up to writing, which is also not true. If we write on a regular daily or near daily basis for even just 15 minutes a day, we will stay emotionally and subconsciously connected to our writing and be able to return to it quickly and easily without having to warm up. And we can also complete long-term projects that way.
That's a contrarian opinion.
Yes.
So you don't hold up with the deep work concept.
I love the deep work concept. Don't misunderstand me. But but it's also not a requirement. We don't have to have huge blocks of time to write. And actually, if you read his book, Deep Work, which you probably have, mm-hmm. he does mention he talks about how it's actually the strategy that he uses to write, which is finding little pockets of time scattered throughout his day. And he still considers that to be deep work.
Huh. Okay. So people, here goes your excuse about I don't have time to write because I can't afford a 2-hour window anytime, like on my schedule.
Right.
That is interesting. I'm going to add a little tweet that in the show notes, because that is a concept that is truly very, very different. It goes like really against the grain of most productivity advice that I've heard. And frankly, to me, that's kind of uplifting, because what I'm hearing here is you kind of keep your muscles in a working condition by
working them out a little bit every day.
Right. By emphasizing consistency over depth.
Right. And what's interesting is that the depth still comes because of the consistency. So in other words, if we're working on a daily or near daily basis, the project is always in our minds. And so we're exploring it and thinking about it when we're showering and when we're washing dishes and when we're going for walks, because it's present all the time. And so our subconscious minds are working on it even when we're not typing at the keyboard. Now, having said that, I still coach writers to gradually build up to more time as they're able to do, if they can do that in their lives. And I prefer to write for, like right now, I'm putting in 2 hours a day on a book that I'm writing. Mm-hmm. And I finished a screenplay in 15-minute increments in a 6-month period. And if I hadn't written at all, I would not have a screenplay.
I see. Well, thank you for that insight. I really, really love it. Again, because it's so different and in a sense, so encouraging for those of us who like, oh no, I can't settle down, or oh, it's such a big commitment. So essentially it's liberating because it doesn't require, you know, there's no barrier of, oh God, I now need to dedicate the entire of 3 hours, because otherwise it's no point.
Right.
Thank you for that.
Okay. You're welcome.
So do you have a system for keeping the consistency?
I do, in fact.
Care to share it on air, or is it too proprietary?
Yes. Oh, no. I'm happy to share it. So the program that I run is called the Called to Write Coaching Circle. My website is Called to Write. The Coaching Circle is our daily accountability program that we run for writers. And what we have is an online site where we check in every day about our writing. And every day we go in and we answer a set of questions about how many minutes we spent writing, how it went, what challenges came up, how we dealt with them, what negative self-statements came up, and ways that we can rewrite them, things like that. And every day that we log in, we earn a little green check mark. And it's sort of like having a star chart when you're a kid. But what's really fun is that you see this grid, this line of green check marks growing next to your name. And it's this wonderful visual acknowledgement of, I showed up today and I wrote.
And that's very motivating. It's like,
it's huge. Yeah.
Okay. Now I can keep going because I don't want to break that green line.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right. And then on top of that, we have some other tools that we use, like goal setting is one of them. But also we have group writing sprints that we run every day on weekdays at 9 o'clock with a coach. We have 9 o'clock Pacific time with a coach. We have a chat room where we all come and we check in and we say, okay, this is what I'm working on today. We set an intention for how we're intending to approach our writing for that day. And then we all go off and write for an hour, and then we come back at the end and say how it went. And that's another just great tool that helps us reinforce the daily habit. It helps us reinforce the social accountability factor. And it also is just really energizing and motivating to write with other people. And it also gives the kind of a go button. That's one of the reasons I like writing with a timer, even if I'm not doing a writing sprint. I like having a button to press that says I'm starting now and these minutes count, because it keeps me on track.
Yes. And that pressing the button is basically a ritual that you're using to ease in the transition.
Right.
Right. It's hard to transition from task to task, and therefore we need rituals. And the fact that you're pressing down that button, that sends a signal to your brain, okay, now we're writing.
Yes.
So we talked a lot about systems for creative work. I wonder, in your business and in your writing, like as a whole, What was the hardest system-related challenge that you have encountered? And which systems realm it belonged to? Was it something to do with your writing or the money systems or maybe time or energy management or what? So if you could give us share a story, either yours or like maybe your client, something that most of us can relate to, like so maybe very common system challenges.
Yeah, it's such a good question. I actually have about 20 things I can think of to answer it. So
rattle them off. I'm not sure we have time for the entire 20.
No, we don't. But I just from a simple writing example, just that kind of reinforces some of the things that we've already been talking about. But when I first started coaching back 15 plus years ago, I started coaching in part because I wanted to have time to write. I was buying into that fantasy that I needed to have a big block of time to write. And so what I did was I set up this schedule where Mondays through Thursdays would be my coaching business days, and then Fridays would be my writing days. And I made sure that I carved out this huge block of time to write on Fridays. And every Friday would roll around, and I would find a whole bunch of other things to do that were really important. Or I would think, well, I said I was going to write, but I don't know what to write. So I'd do something else. And I just was kind of spending a lot of time floundering around and not really getting it and not really knowing what to do. And it was actually this system, this writing accountability system, that helped me see, oh, I don't have to have this big block of time to write. I can use these small increments of time. I can have this social accountability to help me show up for myself. And that was what got me into action with writing, which was really huge. And it's not that I wasn't ever writing, because I was writing a newsletter and other things for my business, but I wasn't doing the kind of long form writing that I was really wanting to be doing. So that was one thing that was actually a huge breakthrough for me. And it's part of why I've made it such a central part of my business, because it was so important for me. And I wanted to share that with other people. And then at the same time, like I have all these other things, like it's very interesting just thinking about this interview today and getting ready to talk to you. I was thinking about how many systems I do have and how many systems I don't have.
You know? Like what?
Okay, oh,
what don't you have?
Well, like for instance, like I know that I have a system that's kind of only half built for dealing with paperwork, filing and dealing with papers that come in and out of the house. Thankfully, there are fewer of them because now that so much can happen digitally, but I still have a backlog of paper that I need to deal with. I don't have a strategy for investing that I'd like to have. There's another one around content plan. I used to have a very systematic approach to how I would generate content for my blog that got disrupted when I had my second child, and I haven't ever quite found my footing again yet. Before he was born, I wrote every single week on Wednesdays, and I published every single week on Wednesdays. So it was really easy. I just automatically did it. But when he was born, my writing goal shifted to keeping up my writing in whatever form. Like I just really wanted to make sure that I kept writing. Because at that point, I had been screenwriting for not that long. And it was more important to me to keep my screenwriting work going than it was for me to keep the blogging going at that particular time. So it's just been evolving and changing since then.
Yeah, a good system in general is, you can relate to it as a live creature because...
Yes, they have to evolve.
Exactly. Exactly. Otherwise, they are dead and you don't want dead things around your office.
No, physically, true.
Or mentally or emotionally.
Yeah.
So a good system is something that constantly adjusts to your needs.
Right.
Right. Okay. Before we wrap up this really enlightening conversation, is there a system that you swear by? And it could be more than one.
Well, obviously my circle, my Call to Write coaching circle is huge because it has kind of that combination of systems of the writing sprints and the timers and the tracking logs and the social accountability. It's sort of this whole package rolled into one that helps us. Another piece that we use behind the scenes with the circle is we have a whole set of recurring tasks built into Asana that we use to track all of the things that we do. Because our sessions for the circle run on a 28-day cycle, we do the same thing every 28 days. But 28 days is just long enough to forget. Wait, what was that thing again? know, if we're trying to just remember it. So we set it up so we have these recurring tasks, and it's easy to go back and remind ourselves, okay, oh yeah, right, that's the next thing. And we have it assigned by team members, so everybody does their part. And then I can easily see if they've done their part or not. And for the most part, I don't even have to think about running the circle anymore on that administrative level. I just get to focus on the fun part, which is coaching the writers.
Ah, that is brilliant. You don't have to deal with the admin because you have a system that takes the minutiae and the no fun parts out of your mental space.
Exactly.
Right. You get to focus on the juicy parts.
Right. Right. And that's what I feel like is so valuable for me about systems, is that, especially as a writer, having systems in place for as many things as I do and as many things as I will, because like I said, there are more that I want to build, it frees up a lot of energy and time and takes away a lot of decision-making, because I want to save my decision-making energy for making decisions about my characters and my plot and my story development and the nonfiction pieces that I'm writing and what goes into them and what's important to me about how they impact my audience, not about whether or not I'm going to write today or when I'm going to do that little task to handle the administrative stuff. You know, I don't want to have to think about this stuff. I just want to do that on autopilot so that I can really put my energy where it matters.
Thank you. That is brilliant. Jenna, where can our listeners find you?
My primary website is calledtowrite.com. And then if you're interested in the circle, you can go directly to the page at justdothewriting.com.
Justdothewriting.com. That's a great name. Like, well, you would say, if you would do that, you're a writer. It's really well written. Justdothewriting.com.
Yes.
Yes. Jenna has a really great bundle of resources specifically for the listeners of this episode. And there will be a link in the show notes. So you can go to coldtowrite.com/systems-meet-humanity. And Jenna, what is going to wait for our listeners in that link?
My top 10 favorite writing tools plus some bonus tools in a list that can help you be more productive and consistent with your writing.
Jenna, thank you so much for being here. I love the conversation. I love the unexpected insights that you shared. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
And for our listeners, we'll talk to you next week. Thanks for listening to Systems Meet Humanity. There are show notes and goodies at systemsmeethumanity.com. We'd love your support. Subscribe, leave us a review, share, tell the world. I'm Marina Darlow, and I'll talk to you next week.